Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for joining me. My next guest, really honored to have him, Paul Overstreet. Of course, we got to thank Lenny Mills. He's a mutual friend of Lenny Mills. They're down in the Cayman Islands right now. Paul Overstreet, many of you know him and know his work. He was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame this year, 2026. Paul Overstreet has been making hits and making people cry and making people think about their life and making people laugh with a lot of his true songs, right? And the reason they are so impactful is there's always some truth in country music. We're now joined by Paul Overstreet. Good morning, Paul. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, Chris. Man, good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well, Paul. I was talking with you off the air quite a bit now, and talking about all these different songs you have written and how impactful they are and how your range. You can write really soulful love songs and missing people songs, and then fun, upbeat songs as well. Talk about the craft of songwriting and how you got into it, Paul.
Oh, gosh. I started when I was a kid. I started trying to write songs like, I was real into Hank Williams, early music, you know, like Hank Williams Sr., his lyrics and his songs. And he did an alter ego guy that recorded some recitations, and I think he went by the name of Luke the Drifter. And those songs were always real. A lot of them are pretty heavy and serious, you know. But I got the meaning from them. I always enjoyed his lyric and stuff. And Marty Robbins, I loved his Gunfighter albums and his records. And I'd try to write like those guys as a kid, and I'd get real frustrated because I didn't know anything. I was just young, so right. I didn't have anything to write about. But eventually, when I was about 8 years old, I saw the movie of Hank Williams' life, and I went, man, that's what I want to do. That would be awesome to be able to do that, make a living at it. My stepfather said, you can't make a living at that, so you got to have something to fall back on. So I studied mechanical drawing at a Votech school for a year or so, and then... But after I got out of high school, I didn't want to do anything but music, but I just really didn't know what I was going to do. But that's kind of been my history, just, you know, all about songwriting, I think.
We're talking with Paul Overstreet. He's a legendary songwriter and performer in the country music world, and he's always got songs out there, like Some Beach, She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy, songs like that are really iconic and fun songs. Talk about some of the artists. So I asked you this over the weekend. When you write a song, do you think about the artist you want to perform it? How does that end up working, Paul?
A lot of times you'll have an artist in mind for a song. Like, for instance, Some Beach. I wrote it with a guy named Rory Feek, and it's kind of wild because he was writing for Clint Black's publishing company, but I had gotten the information that Kenny Chesney was going to do one of his Island records, and he needed some songs for it. And so Rory and I, we started talking, met at Starbucks one day in Bellevue, Tennessee, and we just sitting there talking. And he said, well, we were talking about the Kenny album and what we could write, and we both sit there and said, man, seems like everything about Beaches has already been written. Little did I know, there's a lot more about Beaches that hasn't been written. But anyway, he says, what about Some Beach Somewhere? And I went, ah, cool. And so we started talking about the first verse, you know, driving down the interstate, running 30 minutes late, singing Margaritaville, Mind of My Own. So Margaritaville pulls you in there, you know, and then we go from there to get to the chorus, and Rory, Some Beat Somewhere, sang it like together. And I said, well, what if we do? Well, we separate. We go Some Beats and then let it wait a minute and then go Somewhere. And he goes, oh, I don't know. That's a little too, you know. Then I went, that's why I like it.
Right.
And so anyway, that's how that song came about. And then it took a little more development for us to finish it, but I played it for Kenny backstage in Washington at one of his shows, and it was an after show party. You know, we're just all hanging around, and he put his head right by the guitar and listened to the whole song. And I went, "Well, this is done deal. He'll cut this song." But when he did that album, he didn't cut it. So I went, "Well," and so our girl took it over to Blake Shelton's producer, and he loved it, and so they cut it. You know, they tried to cut it real islandy, and then they went, "No, let's just cut it country." So they cut it. They went back in and overdubbed some stuff, made it just like a country record. And that's what you hear on the radio. So yeah, sometimes you'll be thinking about one artist and it doesn't work for them, so you take it somewhere else.
Speaking with Paul Overstreet, check out his website. It's pauloverstreet.com. He's got all kinds of great stuff, pictures up there, videos. Talk about the songs you've written for Randy Travis that are really American originals. Talk about your work with Randy Travis.
Well, it kind of started when Randy was, you know, just starting to become an artist. And he went through a couple of name changes and finally landed on Randy Travis. I think Martha Sharp said he had Randy Trawick was his original name. And then he went to Randy Ray. And at the record company, they didn't like that. So Martha Sharp goes, "How about Travis? Randy Trawick?" He goes, "Yeah, I could go with that." And so anyway, when he was cutting his first record, I had cut a version of On the Other Hand, and my co-writer's publisher had pitched it for Dan Seals. But I was going to hold it because I was about to do my deal. But Randy and those guys loved it, and so we kind of just – I was riding down the road in Music City one day, and I just had a little Bible verse went through my head. Says, "More blessed to give than receive." So, I mean, because he was a new artist, you never know what's going to happen. We knew Dan Seals would sell 250,000 units.
Okay.
Randy's a new artist. We don't know, you know. So then, but I finally just went, "You know what? You guys cut it. Go with it." And then Randy and his producer, after they listened to that first album, they just listened to it through its entirety. And Kyle said, "I told Randy, I said, I don't think I can cut a better country record than this." And Randy goes, "Well, I don't think I can sing one any better." And Kyle said, "Well, if we can sell 35,000 copies, I think they'll let us do another album." And so they put the album out, and it sold 5 million records. So he was off and running.
It is. So with your established credentials as a songwriter, you can decide who's going to record your songs. How does it work, Paul Overstreet?
Yeah, you have to give a license for someone to record your song the first time anyway. Okay. And then other people can do it with a compulsory license. But yeah, you kind of decide who you'll release it to for the first cutting. You know, once that's done, like I say, there's a compulsive license that goes along after that. So I don't mind other people cutting my song, you know, but if you can pick who cuts it, you know, and has the first record on it, you know, a lot of times that you get it to the right artist, and it's a artist song relationship, a good marriage between the two, usually results in, you know, a good success of a song.
We're speaking with Paul Overstreet, legendary country music star in the Country Music Hall of Fame. He's got a really cool website. Check it out. It's pauloverstreet.com. You've got some new songs on Billy Currington's new album. I like both of them that I heard, but one really interesting one, Anchorman, about a guy who used to be on television, and now he's just out there fishing and sailing, dropping anchor. Talk about what inspired you with that song, Paul.
Oh, you know what? Scotty Emmerich and I, you know, Scotty wrote a lot of stuff with Toby Keith. You know, I love Beer from a Horses. I love this bar and stuff like that. He and I write together, and that was one of the things we wrote together. I don't really remember exactly how we wound up on the title, but I always, when I look back and us writing it, I just remember seeing that little vision of some guy. He's like he's an anchorman on TV, and he's doing the news every day, and he's sick and tired of it, and he just goes down the keys or wherever. He could be up there where you are. And he just gets him a boat, and he calls it the Anchorman, and then he's happy, you know. And that'd be a good way to in your latter life, you know. I always felt like I'd be near the water, so.
Well, you're near the water now. You're down there in the Cayman Islands. That's how you and I got to know each other, was through Lenny Mills, my good friend, your good friend. What a great guy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Had dinner with him last night.
What you mentioned the Bible verse. That's clear throughout your songs, that's one of your inspirations, knowledge of the Bible and respect for religion. Talk about other inspirations that get you to write a song. How does a song come out of your pen?
Well, you know, I've had a lot of relationships and friendships with writers that, like great writers like Shel Silverstein, Don Slitz, Paul Davis, just a ton of Tom Schuyler, even Stevens, Eddie Rabbit. You know, I've been exposed to the way they write songs, and so some wrote from inspiration alone, and others wrote as a business, you know. And one of my mentors, Jim Malloy, he had like 5 Grammys for being an engineer, but he worked with Elvis, Bob Hope, he worked with Johnny Cash, he worked with all these people, but he just told me, you work night and day because you don't ever know, you know, you give yourself as many chances to succeed as you can. And so it turned out to be a business for me. I write because it is part of what I do. It's my business. Right. And when the inspiration hits, because I've been writing, even when I wasn't inspired, I'm prepared to write that song that's a gift, you know, that feels like heaven sometimes just smiles down on you and gives you this idea for a song. And then I'm ready to write it. So that's kind of my process.
I know that Thomas Jefferson said that he wrote the Declaration of Independence that way, that it just came to him. And he started writing, and it all came to him. And I've heard that about other people, you know, who write, songwriters. So that's very interesting. So you're saying it's I'm not going to say divine inspiration, but maybe, right, that it just comes to you.
Well, sometimes, and like Don Slitz called me one day, and I'd played like 36 holes of golf, and he goes, I got this song idea. When I got through playing, I called home, and they said, Don's looking for you. And I said, what's he want? And she goes, my wife said, I don't know, but it seemed important. So I called him, I said, what's up? He goes, got this song idea, we need to write it. And I went, I'm at the golf course, just got through with 36 holes of golf. I said, how about tomorrow? He goes, no, we need to do it now. So I know when somebody's inspired and they've got an idea, I said, well, if you think it's that good, come on over and I'll get a shower and grab something to eat. And so we sat on my front porch that night with a little candle and his little legal pad and the guitar. And we just started writing Forever and Ever, Amen. And the reason he had the idea was his wife's son from another marriage was learning to say the Lord's Prayer, and at the end of, you know, it's forever and ever, amen. And so he was putting that at the end of everything he would say at home. He'd go, Mommy, I love you, forever and ever, amen. And that's how Don explained it to me, and he said, I think we could write that. And I said, yeah, I love it. And then he already had kind of the chorus going, and so we sat there and wrote that song, and that's kind of how it happens. It just sometimes hits people and you go with it, you know?
Well, certainly you've gone with it a lot of times and they've been a tremendous amount of hits. But Paul Overstreet, by the way, check out his website at pauloverstreet.com. Do you like performing or writing better?
Gosh, I love it both, man.
Okay.
I do. I really do. As a kid, I was always writing, but I would just write stuff for me to sing, but I also loved other artists' songs. I loved a lot of Creedence songs. I don't know why, I just love those songs. Me and a friend of mine in California learned every song in their book. And I just, I don't know, I just always loved both. I could I like performing. I like going on stage and singing songs that we've written. I like singing songs I've recorded that I had records on. And then I sometimes love singing other people's songs. It's just, it doesn't matter. I mean, I can, as long as I'm doing something with music, I'm happy.
And Paul, you've got
also, we have a Facebook page called Paul Overstreet Music Facebook, and people can join us on there if they want to contact us or hang out and find out what we're doing.
No, that's fantastic. What's the Facebook page again, Paul?
Paul Overstreet Music Facebook. Now, my wife does a lot of that, and we have other people that kind of look at it sometimes, but anyway, it gets to me eventually.
We really appreciate everything you've written. You made us happy. Sometimes you make us sad, you know. These songs are really powerful that you've written over these years, and your live performances are absolutely amazing.
Well, thank you, Chris. I really appreciate it when people let you know what the music means to them, too. I think that's a wonderful thing, you know, when people hear a song or whatever. I wasn't that sure how powerful music was or my music would be until Same Old Me came out with George Jones and a DJ guy that was, you know, playing records. I was in Texas for some event, and he goes, man, somebody called in, a trucker was driving. He called in and he said, it's a matter of life and death that you play that song for me and dedicate it to his wife. And I was like, and he was just, when he said that, it hit me. I was like, wow,
right,
man, that songs really mean a lot to people. And that's, I mean, music in general.
It's an incredible craft, and we're lucky you dedicated yourself to this as opposed to, what are we going to do, architectural drawing? I think that was what you went to school for.
Well, yeah.
We're better off that you picked up, that you decided to stick with music and songwriting, Paul.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm down here. I'm writing a book right now about my life, and it was a long, long road, a long process, and people won't, when I was just starting to put the details in this book, I'm like going, oh man, it's kind of a crazy world. My world was pretty crazy, and it's amazing that I found a path that, you know, took me to where I am now. But it's just fun to think back on all those different twists and turns and directions you could have gone.
Right. That song.
Hey, but I'll tell you, it's people like you, Chris, that gets our music out there, that makes everybody, gives them a chance to hear it. So thank you for what you do. It's really valuable. And I know you have a large audience, yeah, and I know that they love you, and I'm honored to be on your show.
Paul, I really appreciate you making time for us this morning here from the Cayman Islands. Paul Overstreet, check out his Facebook, check out his website, pauloverstreet.com. I had a lot of fun with it over the weekend. I'm preparing for this interview. My friend, I'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, I appreciate you and appreciate you playing our songs, and just say hello to your audience for us.
Thank you so much, Paul. That's Paul Overstreet, legendary singer-songwriter, and he's got more songs coming out every day, really. But a lot of top artists in the country genre perform his music. And like I said, I know him through Lenny Mills. He's down in the Cayman Islands with Lenny right now. Don't you wish you were there as well? Well, the weather's not bad here in Fairhaven. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be right back. We'll be joined by a lot of people, including you, if you'd like to, at 508-996-0400. Miles Grant will be here in the 11 o'clock hour. He's running for the select board up here in Fairhaven, and we appreciate that. So he'll be here, talk about Fairhaven issues and the override and all kinds of stuff, what he plans to do if you elect him to the select board. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Back to Chris McCarthy and South Coast Now on WBSM. Call 508-996-0500.
Takes a whole lot of liquor to locker. That's why I drink all the time. Takes a whole lot of liquor to locker. But when I'm liquored up, I like her just fine. She wants to tell me where to go, tell me what to do, tell me what to eat and how loud I can chew. She even wants to tell me what thoughts ought to think. It used to drive me crazy till it drove me to drink. It takes a whole lot of liquor to like her. That's why I drink all the time. It's a whole lot of liquor to like
her. Welcome back to the program. See what I mean? Paul Overstreet can write really funny. And there's some truth, probably. I know there is in that song. So we want to thank Paul Overstreet again for making time. And Tim and I were talking at the break, and he said to me, because Tim, of course, is one of the bosses here. He said, hey, don't be afraid to do that again. Don't be afraid to interview people that you want to talk to just because you want to talk to them, right? Because they have a lot to offer to the audience. And I got a whole bunch of text messages from people in the political world who normally tune in to hear talk about politics saying, wow, what a nice change that was. To have a guy like Paul Overstreet here on the program. Turn that junk car into cash today at Mid-City Scrap in Westport. We pay top dollar for complete vehicles. Mid-City Scrap in Westport. We pay top dollar for complete vehicles. Listen to this. Small car, $400 to $500 in cash. Mid to large size cars, $500 to $600 in cash. SUV, up to $700 in cash. Full size trucks, up to $800 in cash. No games, no waiting, just fast cash. Very simple. Call Joe, Johnny, Mark, or Doug at 508-675-7831. Again, very easy. Call Joe, Johnny, Mark, or Doug at 508-675-7831. Mid-City Scrap. Cash for junk cars. State Road in Westport. So, in the first hour, we talked with the president of the New Bedford Fire Union, Billy Sylvia, about the death of the Boston firefighter. I didn't know when I scheduled that he actually was personally friends with that Boston firefighter, and that of course adds an extra dimension of sadness to the story and how close that the New Bedford Fire Department was with BK, as he's known, was known. And his funeral will be coming up. It's a dangerous job. It's a very dangerous job that most of us clearly would not do, okay? And the men and women who are willing to do it should be appreciated. And at the same time, you got to recognize there are fiscal pressures, right? You can't have even everything that you need, apparently, in today's climate. So, 508-996-0. Open phones, whatever's on your mind, I want to hear it. Good morning. Thanks for holding.
Chris, I'm sorry to have popped in.
That's all right.
I don't know what you were talking about.
Okay.
And you're talking about somebody's...
Well, just what did you want to talk about? That's fine with me.
I'm probably totally inappropriate. I was just going to say, I know you have, you know, a grasp on a lot of things from the past, and Barry's a big history buff. What do people mean by justice delayed is justice denied? And also, what do you think how that compares to the Bible, having people wait, you know, 40 years until they're 100 to physically see justice in their lives as they live? Okay, so that's a lot. I wanted to know who you talked about. It sounds like somebody passed on.
Well, a Boston firefighter was killed in the line of duty on Friday, I believe it was Friday. I'm just trying to remember. Maybe Thursday, but a very well-known firefighter from Boston was killed in the line of duty. What does justice delayed is justice denied? Okay. So what that means is, and it was primarily in the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s. And I'll use the Woolworths as an example, because that's a very well-known situation. When African Americans were not allowed to sit at the counter in Woolworths, okay? And right. That obviously is an old practice now. But if you don't have justice, if there's injustices being committed against you at this moment, it doesn't matter if later on they're corrected. Because in that moment, you've been denied dignity, things like that, that are crucial to the human experience. Dignity is crucial to the human experience.
Sure is. And also, but if you stay on your path, justice isn't necessarily of this world.
Correct.
You know, but it still matters how you conduct yourself. Okay, have a good day.
You too. Thanks for the call.
I'll send up my prayers, but I can guarantee you they'll be delayed, if not denied.
Thank you. Thank you. 508-996-05. I'm happy to answer any question that you have on whatever. That's the beauty of talk radio. There's an article, a number of them actually, that are very interesting in the New Bedford Light to draw your attention to. And there's one on the budget deficit that I think, written by Colin Hogan, he covers City Hall and does a really good job at it. It explains what many of us have been kind of confused about. And I started to get into it earlier in the hour. And it's worth your attention. Because there really is not a deficit in the sense that the mayor and his team balance the budget. You can't have a state, a city, or municipal budget that's not balanced. That's state law. So Colin Hogan explains that, because I know a lot of you, myself included, have sort of been hard-pressed to understand what the conversation really was, because I'm looking at a balanced budget, that the mayor produced. But Colin Hogan does a really nice job explaining all that. So I'd encourage you to go to New Bedford Light, newbedfordlight.org, and read the article, or let the robot listen to it. Well, now we're now joined by Lenny Mills, selectman in Rehoboth, who certainly understands balanced budgets. He's been doing them for a number of years out there in Rehoboth. And he's the one who introduced me to Paul Overstreet and arranged for that really great interview that was so enjoyable. And I hope, if you missed it, by the way, you can always check it out on the podcast. Lenny Mills, what's it like in the Cayman Islands right now?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How you doing? How's that audience doing out there?
Everybody's doing great. We're wondering when you're going to come back, though.
Well, between Paul and I, we've extended our tickets so much, I don't think the airlines is going to let us keep doing it at this point, though they're not afraid to charge, you know. But we got to get back. Yeah, I'm going to fly back tomorrow, actually.
So you'll be back in time for town meeting in Rehoboth.
Oh, absolutely. I can't miss that. You know, I'll be back for that. And, so I'll fly in tomorrow, I'll get in later at night, and I'll be back in action Thursday morning, you know.
How's it been in the Cayman Islands?
It's been absolutely beautiful. I mean, the weather's beautiful. The people are beautiful. The food's beautiful. And, we had such a great time with our friends out here, especially with Paul. And we've had a lot of laughs. And Paul, when you're with Paul, you do a lot of laughing. I mean, you got a little flavor of his personality. He's a perfect gentleman. Yeah. He's talented, and he's not an air of arrogance to him or entitlement. He's just a real, real good human being. So I'm glad your audience got to hear him today. You know,
no, that was a real honor. It was a real honor, really enjoyable interview. And the reaction I've been getting from text messages, people, like a lot of political people who normally tune into the show to hear about politics, what we normally do, we're really enjoying the conversation with Paul Overstreet. It's a really nice change, and I think I'm going to look to do more of those. I'm going to have to lean on you, Lenny, to line up some more of those for me. So you were telling me, been a little bit since you've been in the Cayman Islands. You did a lot of developing down there, but now you're back. It's really grown in population, right?
Yeah, so as we talk today, the population is just under 90,000 people. When I first come out here and met Paul, going back, 22 years ago, I'd say approximately, the population was under 30,000, you know. So it's tripled out here. And, the times are changing, in a lot of ways. So they're challenged with infrastructure and when I first came here, for example, the zoning on 7 Mile Beach, which is a tremendous beach in the Caribbean, not only in the Cayman Islands, was 3 stories high for condominiums and 5 stories maximum for, you know, hotels like the Westin and things like that. But today, they're just reaching for the skies more and more. And I guess it's a matter of opinion whether that's good or not. You know, I have my opinion of it, but it has changed quite a bit. The building, the whole shoreline's changing, and the population is exploding out here.
We're speaking with Lenny Mills. Of course, he's a regular here on the program. He's a Rehoboth selectman. He's down in the Cayman Islands. He's returned again to the Cayman Islands. So the industries down there, it's a lot of financial, obviously, but they're also doing a lot with medical and things like that now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They got a big medical facility going here. The Dot Corporation and family are doing tremendous. So hold on one second. I want to say goodbye to my friend here. Take care, Doc. Huh?
Have a good time. Your remaining time here.
I will.
Pleasure to meet you.
I'm on the radio show now. So.
Sorry,
that's okay. Nice to see you. Pleasure. Take care. Yeah, that's a good friend of ours out here. He's got quite a story. You know, he was born in Cuba, and he came here when he was 6 years old in the early 60s, right after Castro took over. His father was a doctor in Cuba, and his mother, family, the whole family came to the United States to move to Miami. And his father had to go back to school to become a doctor here. And in turn, he grew up here, and he became a doctor, and he vacations here regularly. So he had a lot of talks about Cuba, you know, that their insight on, because they're from that country, and they have some interesting perspective about what's going on.
Lenny Mills, of course, the selectman of Rehoboth, but he's also an international man and was very good friends with Sergei Khrushchev, the son of the former dictator of the Soviet Union. You used to bring him to the Cayman Islands with you?
Yeah, he came out here a lot, him and his wife, Valentina. He's probably been out here 5 or 6 times. He's actually very kind, too, like Paul was. He's gone and spoke in front of the we went to the Glass House, which is the government house here in the Cayman Islands. We met the president and all the dignitaries, the governor, which is appointed by the King of England now, but back then it was the Queen. They have a governor they appoint to the Cayman Islands because it's British, and they sit over and make sure that the island follows parliamentary procedures.
Yep.
That's what happens when you're out of the loop for almost 3 weeks, right? You get so relaxed out here. I'm actually sitting out on the beach to give your audience a perspective, and that's what happened. People walking by waving, and that my friend there from Miami is just leaving. But yeah, Khrushchev, he was here. He spent a lot of time here, and he had been to Cuba. He knew both Castros. He knew the father, he knew the brother, and he knew Raul. And he has an interesting take on, you know, what was going on over there. But the world's changing now. You know, I think the Cuban people right now are really hopeful, but they're very, very cautious, Chris, because they feel that the United States has a lot on the plate with Iran and, you know, different things. And maybe the Cuban issue may not get the full energy it needs, you know, if I'm using the right way to describe it.
Right.
They just hope that it's going to fall. Remember, the people have never been free. You know, you think they're free, but they're not. They're the best chance of them. I mean, in the early 1900s, Spanish, and then you had the, you know, the American flag flew over there for a long time. And then, you know, when Castro's took over, they was hopeful that they were going to be free and the democracy. And we all know what happened there. So, I mean, they're cautiously optimistic, but, you know, they see the United States has their plate. But in my opinion, talking with them, and I've said it to them, I mean, we can't get an independence for Cuba and get those bad communists that are running those countries out of there, if we don't get our bad communists over there, it's really, really corrupt. If we don't get them out of there, it'll be at least another 100 years before we have a shot at it, in my humble opinion.
Oh, I agree with you. I say the time is now.
Yeah, I mean, the time's now, but we don't know how busy, you know, our government is with other things. I mean, they're certainly not twiddling their thumbs with Iran, you know, in the Middle East. But I have a lot of faith in Rubio, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Let's hope the president gives him the latitude to to it, because if anyone understands it, because he's from Cuba, his family's from Cuba, right?
Yes.
If anyone understands their situations and challenges, he does, for sure, you know. So, yeah, the Cuba. I talked to a lot of Cuban people this month when I was out here.
Lenny, the sheriff, Tom Hodgson, and I are hoping you're going to have some ideas of some land acquisitions we can make in Cuba.
Yeah, everybody's talking about that. But again, you know, quite honestly, everybody's cautious. There's a lot of investors in the Cayman Islands.
Yes.
You know? Cayman Islands is the fifth largest financial district in the world, you know. And but people are cautious, you know. They're like, what's going to really happen? You know, they're afraid that in the final analysis, maybe nothing's going to change. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
But, you know, they've been in a long time. They've been in, you know, obviously since Castro. They've been in there since the 50s. And they're entrenched in there, and they have such a stronghold. And the people have been oppressed and held back so long. It's not like they like it, but it's just become, they're used to it. You know, it's like my old saying we laugh about, you know, fish don't know he's in water.
Right.
They've been oppressed so long, you know, from not having electricity, not enough food, to not the right medicine, you know, things like that. But, you know, I don't know. I think the United States is in a strong position to really make change. Let's hope that it happens for them.
Lenny Mills, I really appreciate you calling me from the beach in the Cayman Islands. Thank you for arranging the Paul Overstreet interview. And I guess we'll see you here in the studio on Friday.
Yeah, I guess, sir, we will, okay? Thank you, and hello to everybody out there.
Thank you, my friend. 508-996-0500. I got to take a break, and then we'll be back. Short break, though. Stick around.
This portion of programming on WBSM brought to you by South Coast Health. Advanced medicine, more care. South Coast Now with Chris McCarthy. Weekdays on 1420 AM and 99.5 FM. WBSM.
And I come to know the charming way of a southern belle. She weaved a web so gently, and I fell under her spell. As I held Georgia, Georgia in Alabama, she was everything I ever dreamed. I gotta tell you.
Welcome back to the program. That's Billy Currington with his song Georgia and Alabama that was written by my former guest, Paul Overstreet. It's a really good song, and just on his new album now, so you'd be probably hearing that all summer long. I don't normally kiss and tell, but I had a Georgia in Massachusetts long time ago now. But, you know, you never forget, right? So, 508-996-0500. That's how you can get on the air. Citywide Glass, they're hiring. Your career should be as solid as the work that you do. At Citywide Glass, we're growing a team that values quality, integrity, and service. We're expanding and looking for motivated individuals to join our crew. Whether you're a pro in the field or great with people, we have a spot for you. We are currently hiring auto and residential glass technicians, customer service and front counter sales associates, and accounts receivable representatives. Enjoy competitive pay, a strong company culture, and a real opportunity to move up. Make the safe choice for your future. Apply today at Citywide Glass. Go to Citywide Glass in Dartmouth, Citywide Glass in Fall River, or online at citywideglass.net. All right, we got some people on hold. Let's see what it brings us. Good morning. Thank you for holding.
Oh, hey, thanks. You know, Don Jr. got married yesterday or a couple of days ago.
Okay.
Did you catch who he married?
I did not.
Well, Epstein had a lawyer. His lawyer's name was Harry Loy Anderson. And so his daughter just
was Lonnie Anderson?
Loy.
He married Lonnie Anderson?
No.
Oh, okay.
He married Harry Loy Anderson's daughter.
Okay.
So the Epstein, you know, that family doesn't do anything without reason.
Right.
And the idea that they would continue the Epstein legacy by marrying Epstein's lawyer to Don Jr. a couple of days ago? I mean, what are these creeps doing?
You can't be serious right now. In other words, so a girl's father is a lawyer in the criminal realm, and you can't marry her because her dad is represented? That's a ridiculous standard.
Well, it kind of gets more into, you know, if somebody can't testify because they're married, you know, you can't testify.
You
got to
put the crack pipe down. You're whacked out of your skull. I'm serious. You can't think that. Wait, you think that you got this weird conspiracy theory that he's marrying the daughter of the lawyer? What legal protection does that offer? I'm serious. I have no idea what you're talking. I don't think you do either. But explain to me the legal precedent.
Testify against a wife, and a wife can't testify against a husband. Right.
But how does that affect the Epstein case?
Well, what did they know, and what do we not know?
You're the best, David Grace. You're the best.
Yeah. Well, I know that.
Thank you for waiting on hold, though, to tell me that. He was on hold for, like, I swear to God, 10 minutes to tell us that whacked out. I don't know who was inspiring it. I was kind of a joke, a very joke, because I don't know the man personally. I don't think he was really smoking crack. But, like, cocaine causes paranoia and scrambles the brains. That is the most ridiculous theory I've ever heard. I often hear that guy calling Tim's show, that somehow Epstein's lawyer, Epstein is dead. I mean, unless that guy doesn't believe it, maybe he doesn't, believe that Epstein is dead. I believe that Epstein is dead. That Don Jr., Donald Trump Jr. would somehow be marrying the lawyer. By the way, do you know how many lawyers Epstein had? If Don Jr. had to marry, for whatever dreamed up reason my last caller had, every one of the lawyer's daughters to somehow protect the Trump family? That's ridiculous. It's so dumb, but I do enjoy the weird side of the left political perspective. I know there's a lot of people who say the right wing have conspiracy theories, and there are conspiracy theories on the conservative side. But the left has got really the market on some of the best conspiracy theories, because they actually believe them. That poor gentleman who just called my program, I believe he lives in California, waited on hold for probably 10 minutes to tell us something he clearly believes, which is obviously not based in reality, that Donald Trump Jr. married the lawyer's daughter, who used to represent a now dead man, to somehow protect the family. From what? From what? And why would you have to marry somebody? He couldn't even articulate that. It's a ridiculous reason. But it was fun talking to the loony left for a little bit. All right, I'm going to take a break, and then we'll be right back. More reality, real reality, not imagine left-wing reality. I hope, anyway, when we come back. Welcome back to the program. There's a very famous song, right? Forever and Ever, Amen, written by my last guest, Paul Overstreet. Check it out at pauloverstreet.com. Really very interesting, fun website, right? Doesn't have to always be serious here. We'll have a guest coming up who will be serious. Miles Granny's running in Fairhaven. We're going to talk to him about the budget, the Proposition 2.5 override, what his goals are if he joins the 5-member Board of Selectmen, select board that runs the town, along with all the different boards. And should be a very interesting conversation. We had Pam Kiesler in, who's also running for the select board. We'll have Rick Trapillo, who's also running for the select board. I think that's it. But you know, little quick 30-minute conversations on local issues. And this is a good forum to do it. And Miles will take phone calls. If you'd like to call in, you can. One of the things I found is that we have these candidates for select board on. A lot of people don't call in. It's not like the city audience, for whatever reason. And I think I get it. It's a small, relatively small town. And people don't want to call because they don't want to hear their voices or people hearing their voices. But I think that's a an unnecessary concern. I know when we do Mattapoisett, which we've done, we didn't get a lot of calls. And we probably won't get a lot of calls, but we might. We didn't get a lot for Pam. And we have in the other cycles when I've done it as well, we didn't get a lot of calls. But I do know that a lot of people appreciate it. And even if you don't, I think it's part of my responsibility as a public radio station, you know. Well, it's private, but we've got a public license to bring you the best I can of accurate information. Allow candidates, because remember, you've got to qualify to get on the ballot with the signatures and all of that, and then you got to get out there and campaign. So there are qualifications, and if you meet those qualifications, I'm more than happy to grant you part of my platform to come on, even if I don't agree with you, and I'm not sure that how I feel about a lot of people until I listen to them, and that's part of this as well, right? I want to get a sense of who is going to be running the town of Fairhaven with the town administrator and with the members of town meeting. So 508-996-0500. That's how you can get on hold. I'm going to talk to Miles after the news. But he's very prolific on social media as well. So, and I know he's happy to respond to people, or at least willing to. I don't know if he's happy about it, but he's certainly willing to, because I follow his comments and things like that that are on Facebook and other social media platforms. So he's certainly excited.